We are live. Welcome to the NBA Strategy Show. It is Friday, November 26th. Took me a second there. I am Josh Engelman. I am joined by Adam Scher. We are here to break down an 11-game NBA slate. There are 12 games today. We are not talking about the game that tips off at 3:30, but you should watch it and play the showdown contest if you want. We are also brought to you by Prize Picks. They are the presenting sponsor of this show. We'll talk about them in a bit, but let's start here. Hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when everything goes live. Adam, how was your Thursday?
It was good. Pretty much same as usual. We're not doing family Thanksgiving until tomorrow. So just drove down to my mom's, hung out there, watched god-awful football all day.
Yes.
Lost a bunch of money on the said god-awful football. So really good time. How was your Thanksgiving?
Pretty similar. I lost less money than you, but that was because I played less money than you. I did not return a single dollar of the 3-max contest that I got in yesterday. That's usually a real fun time. So the moment Josh Reynolds scored, I was just like, I already know how the rest of today is going to go. And it turns out that was absolutely right. So it was a good holiday all around. Ate some good food, hung out with my fam. It was a good time. So ready for the NBA to be back. Unfortunately, I'm not playing this slate again today. I still got more family stuff and everything to do. So I'm slowly but surely getting back to, I'm really excited for Monday to really dive in. Next week's slate is 9 games, 5 games, 9 games, 5 games, 9 games. I'm in for all 5 of those. So it should be a really fun week for DFS.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
All righty. I am just going to copy one or two more things over. I want to see how the crunch I ran earlier today shapes up, but we got 11 games to break down. We have an hour and 15 minutes to do it. Tons of shows coming up after this. Adam, are you ready to dive in?
Yeah, with the caveat that Popcorn Machine doesn't have Wednesday's games updated, so things might take a little bit longer.
And that was they like actually don't have them, which was
oh, it's not even like I can't even change the URL.
Nope. Are you looking for Houston and Chicago by any chance?
I'm looking for any of them.
Oh yeah, Houston and Chicago. I failed even changing the URL and I don't really know why. I've never seen it not, like, I've seen the list not update. I've never seen it not be there for, like, even if you wanted to do it manually. And I tried both sides. Houston and Chicago was the one that I was doing, and they don't have, like, any sort of weird abbreviations that I knew that I was getting wrong. So unless I was typing the date in incorrectly, it just wasn't.
Why Houston, Chicago?
I think it was Houston and Chicago.
Oh, the Chicago side, okay.
Yeah. I think it was a Houston and Chicago game from Wednesday.
Yeah, Chicago at Houston.
Yeah. Did not get it, but, you know, it is the morning after Thanksgiving, and I did have a few cocktails yesterday, so I could have certainly been spelling one of those things wrong, and
no,
I wouldn't be
you.
Shocked.
I just tried. Okay.
What you really should have done there is told me that it was me. Just at least drag me out for like 5-10 minutes of me thinking that I'm a complete idiot. All I need is ownership. Whew, Wendell Carter Jr. season on FanDuel today, and DraftKings for that matter, but very much on FanDuel, which I'm not mad about, but 43% right now. All right, game time. Here we go. First game up. And this one's a kind of a doozy for a fantasy perspective. Minnesota at Charlotte. The Wolves are 3-point dogs, 222 total. Minnesota is going to be without Patrick Beverley in this one. We saw that Malik Beasley got a big time increase in minutes this last time out. If that's going to happen again, he's going to look like one of the better plays of the day from a value perspective. But this one is sort of just comes down to 4 guys, Towns, Edwards, Russell, Beasley. I think you can make different cases for each guy depending on which site you're playing on. But, you know, Beasley's going to look like a good value on both sides. I think Russell and Edwards just look good in this pace up spot. And we've got Karl Anthony Towns at 8,800 on FanDuel today, which I would imagine is his lowest price basically ever. What do you think about Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good spot. Like you said, there's several guys that are going to look pretty good here. Towns' salary on FanDuel looks great. 9,500 on DraftKings is fine, but obviously not as good as it is on FanDuel. But 7,500 for Anthony Edwards, 7,400 for Russell, 3,900 for Beasley. Those all look really good. You can, in tournaments, you can even throw in 4,700 for Jared Vanderbilt in a good spot here. You know, he's between a 0.9 and 1 fantasy point per minute player. If he can stay out of foul trouble, you're likely to get upper 20s in minutes. But I agree with you. You know, Towns, Edwards, Russell, Beasley, you really can't go wrong with those guys. Beasley right now is projected to be the highest owned guy on DraftKings. 3,900, you know, it makes sense, though.
Yeah. I don't know what else you could really do with him at 3,900. I assume he starts. I gave him 33 minutes. If he doesn't start and it ends up being like Jordan McLaughlin or something, you'll be moving some stuff around here. McLaughlin would likely look pretty decent as a $3,200 pay down point guard. It could be someone else too, for all I know. I mean, they can go a lot of different directions for who actually starts in that fifth spot.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't be surprised at all if it's not Beasley, just to keep him with the second unit.
That would not surprise me at all. For right now, I think like we kind of just have to move forward since he is the guy that took all those minutes. But
yeah, like I think this could be
anybody.
I think he gets an extra run either way. It's just a matter of, you know, is he starting or is he subbing in for D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah, at worst case scenario here, you're probably projecting him for 28 minutes and he's still one of the better sub 4K guys you're going to find. I'm not really trying to get to much else. Jared Vanderbilt's at 8% ownership. I get why that's happening. It's not all that appealing to me. And for some strange reason, that must be a draft. I must have pasted DraftKings ownership into FanDuel because there's no way Jared Vanderbilt is 6K and getting that kind of ownership. That would be insanity. Yeah, I didn't paste the FanDuel one into FanDuel. I pasted DraftKings twice. I was like, that looks just wildly incorrect. if anybody wants to own Jared Vanderbilt at 6K on FanDuel, good luck with it. I cannot believe Karl Anthony Towns is 8,800 on FanDuel, but basically everybody is at the top is like $600 underpriced on FanDuel, except for Jokic and Giannis.
Yeah, I kind of think on FanDuel with the one center, with it being one center, you kind of make the case that that's still like a fair price tag on Towns. Not that he's not going to beat it, but any slate that Jokic plays, the opportunity cost of that position, like it's always high anyway because of just how many high upside players there are. But yeah. if you roster Towns, you can't roster the highest scoring player on the slate. It's basically that simple.
Yep, I'm with you there. Who is your favorite out of that trio, though, Towns, Edwards, Russell, today?
It's between Russell and Edwards. They're cheaper. I think the price tags look really good. Russell is where I would lean. He's been, you know, Edwards obviously is coming off of the massive game last time out, but we have seen overall his usage taking a hit in the games he's played with D'Angelo Russell. I think that what we saw last time, you know, obviously it's not going to happen consistently, but I think you kind of are going to see this pattern with Edwards where he plays a lot of minutes, he has some somewhat disappointing games, and then occasionally he gets hot and just goes absolutely nuts. You know, I think that's going to be the case. Whereas Russell, I expect to be a little bit more steady. He's been about 1.1 to 1.15 fantasy points per minute since returning from his injury. Now taking Beverly out, you know, maybe you get a little bit more in the way of assists for him too. So I think it's really close between Edwards and Russell. But if ownership is about the same, which right now there's more going to Edwards, that's probably because he's guard and forward eligible, though. I kind of just don't really have a strong preference between the two.
All right. Anything else from Minnesota?
No.
On the Charlotte side, we do have a Q tag on Mason Plumlee. That could create a gigantic ripple effect. He's not playing a ton of minutes, but it definitely does like shuffle up some of the deck chairs. After that, we've got LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges, and Terry Rozier all in the double digits of ownership on FanDuel. LaMelo doesn't see that on DraftKings because he's 10,300. He's only 9,300 on FanDuel. So Bridges, Rozier, Ball on FanDuel all look pretty good to me. I think you can make some cases for value on someone like Cody Martin or Kelly Oubre, at least particularly on DraftKings, where both guys are relatively cheap. I like Charlotte. I like this game in general from a fantasy perspective. And if Mason Plumlee gets ruled out, we're going to have some real conversations about potentially PJ Washington, Nick Richards, Jalen McDaniels. Something else is going to open up here then too.
Yeah, I like this game too. And, you know, I think that from the Charlotte side, there's just a lot of guys that you can get to here. LaMelo at 10-3 is expensive, but we know that he's playing more minutes recently. He's still certainly capable of having success there. 7,800 for Bridges looks fine. 6K for Rozier is pretty interesting coming off of a massive game. Obviously, you're not expecting him to replicate that performance. He had 6 steals and a block. But what stands out to me with Rozier more so is the playing time ramping up a bit. Overall this year, he's averaged about 32 minutes per game. But over his last 6, you have 32, 33, 22, in a game. I don't remember what happened in that game. 30, 35, 37. So really excluding that 22-minute game, he's been playing like his season average as sort of a floor. And then in the last couple, you've gotten 35 and 37 minutes. Even if he plays 30 to 32 minutes, he can certainly succeed at 6K. He's averaging 0.94 DraftKings points per minute this season. But if you do get a few extra minutes, he's going to look really good.
Yep, I'm with you here. What's your expectation? Let's say Plumlee has to be out. Or is out today. What's your expectation? Is that Nick Richards? Can PJ Washington play enough? He played 6 minutes in his first game back. I don't feel like he's just going to immediately play 28.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's that, and Vernon Carey's out at least for right now. He's listed as out on assignment.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. I think they probably give Nick Richards the first crack. I've had a hard time kind of knowing what they want to do with Nick Richards, because from the reports I've seen, they've been impressed with his play. James Borrego has talked about needing to play him more, and then as a result of needing to play him more, has actually started playing him less. So I don't really know exactly what they think of Nick Richards, but yeah, my guess is he would get the first crack at it. I don't really feel confident in what they're going to do, though.
Flat 3K on DraftKings today, so just keep your eye on that for Mason Plumlee. I don't know what they would do. I really don't. Obviously, it's normally going to just be PJ Washington, and it's not even going to be a discussion. I just don't think that that's going to be the case, given how long Washington was out. Hadn't played since November 3rd before getting 6 minutes in their last one. Anything else here for Charlotte?
No, I don't think so.
All righty. Next one up is a little easier. Phoenix at New York, the Knicks, that is. Suns are 3-point favorites in New York, 216.5 total. And this is business as usual for Phoenix. Highest owned guy on DraftKings is $7,400 DeAndre Ayton at 8%. We see Mikal Bridges at 5K on FanDuel and Devin Booker at $7,700 on FanDuel. Both get to around 10 to 15% ownership. All that seems about right to me. There are no priorities as per usual for me from Phoenix. It's just a couple guys that you can roster and will cycle through.
Yeah, that's how I see it as well. I think that Ayton probably looks the most favorable in terms of salary at $7,400, but he's also at the most difficult or the easiest position to fill, I guess I should say. So that's going to drive the ownership down and make it more of a mediocre play. Obviously, you can always get the Bridges, Booker, Paul, but they don't stand out as long as this team's healthy.
Yeah, I have nothing else really here to add. This is just another setup where, like, Devin Booker at $7,700 is probably properly priced. It just feels weird for Devin Booker to be $7,700. But every single team has a Devin Booker version guy that seems like he's $500 cheaper than they should be on FanDuel.
Right. Like, $7,700 is clearly a good play. He obviously has a high ceiling at that price, and he's likely to, you know, satisfy it. But if everybody, you know, if every team has a guy like that, it all just kind of comes out in the wash because he doesn't stand out relative to the slate.
Yep. Now, the next one is where things start to get a little interesting. Although, in the grand scheme of things, it probably doesn't matter. It'll just matter once we get the info. The Knicks have Q tags on Mitchell Robinson, Taj Gibson, and Derrick Rose. I think Derrick Rose's questionable tag is the only one that legitimately matters, in that we know what happens with the center rotation for the Knicks. If Mitchell Robinson happens to be out, then Nerlens Noel just steps up. Taj Gibson becomes the backup. If Mitchell Robinson happens to be in, but Gibson's out, then nothing matters because he probably wasn't going to play at all anyway. That piece of this is all pretty easy to handle. And the ownership bears out how uninteresting the Knicks are, at least as of right now. 9% owned Randall on FanDuel is the highest mark on either site. 3% on RJ Barrett is the highest owned guy for the Knicks today on DK, which is kind of nuts. If Rose ends up being out, things could look a little bit more interesting from a guard rotation perspective. We just get a couple more minutes going around, maybe quickly looks a little interesting, but I find the Knicks side of this game to be wildly unappealing.
Yeah, if everybody's in, that's how I feel as well. Obviously, you can get to Julius Randle at any time, but he doesn't really stand out. And, you know, the pricing is just kind of where it should be. You can always take shots at a 5K Kemba in tournaments or a $4,500 Rose, but nothing's really going to stand out there, especially with how kind of difficult it's been to predict the Knicks rotations recently. And you've seen the salaries come up a little bit. If Rose is out, it's still risky going to these guys, but we did see Evan Fournier really benefit in terms of playing time last game. He's only $4,700.
You think he gets 42 minutes again?
Right. So, I mean, he went from not playing in the fourth quarter to playing like the entire second half. So there's certainly upside there. We didn't see Kemba Walker benefit in terms of playing time. Quickly, essentially, just took the Derrick Rose role, became the backup. That doesn't mean it's going to happen like that again. You could see Kemba play well and Kemba get more minutes. So it increases Kemba's chances of hitting his ceiling, at least, I think. But it still would make this a pretty risky team, just a little bit more appealing to get to from a ceiling standpoint.
Yeah. There's another one where Julius Randle is $10,100 on DraftKings, $8,700 on FanDuel. Julius Randle playing the role of Devin Booker from the Suns in that he just has a price that seems weird, and then you realize that everybody has that exact same weird price tag. Yeah, I got nothing else to add here. Unless Mitchell Robinson and Taj Gibson both happen to be ruled out, I don't think that it ends up getting all that interesting in the front court either. So I'm good on the Knicks.
Same.
All righty. Schedule for the rest of the day. Lots going on. We've got the Osmo Fantasy Football Show on the Osmo Fantasy Football channel at 11 a.m. We also have college football live before lock from 11 to 12. Don't miss that. NFL Strategy Show Top Stacks Edition is at 12:30. NFL On the Contrary coming up at 1 p.m. We get the NHL Strategy Show at 2, the Yahoo NFL Show at 3, the College Football Prize Pick Show at 4. Adam will then be back with Laffy for the NBA Deeper Dive at 4:45, NBA Live Before Lock at 6. We've got NBA player rankings free today. NFL player projections are free if you want to start prepping for Sunday, and NHL player projections are also free. We're on to game number 3 here. Chicago Bulls, 8-point favorites in Orlando. Oh, the Orlando Magic. Really excited to talk about them. So everybody's healthy for Chicago outside of Patrick Williams, which is a long-term injury. On the Orlando side, though, Cole Anthony is questionable, but from all reports, it's looking like he's just going to be out for a bit. So I already have him out. Terrence Ross is questionable. We already know Isaac and Fultz and MCW and Etan Moore are out. So let's start with the Chicago side. Only guy in double digits in ownership on either site is DeMar at 13% on FanDuel. No one's owned more than 4% on DraftKings right now. I don't have any standout plays. This is just another one where it's, if you want to play DeMar, Lonzo, LaVine, Caruso even, although Caruso's price is a little high now. You can just play these guys because they're getting minutes. Do you see anything interesting here for Chicago?
I mean, I'm with you as far as they all kind of blend together, you know, the Rose and Levine ball. It's really difficult to point to any one of them and say, oh, you know, this is a game where Levine's going to go nuts or DeRozan or whatever. The one thing I would add, though, and we saw this the other day, so we know Orlando is going to get ownership, especially assuming Cole Anthony is out. You're just going to have really, really good values here. Orlando is a very, very bad team on, yeah. Well, with Anthony out on both sides of the ball, but and, you know, anyway, they're bad defensively. What we saw the other day against Milwaukee was, you know, everybody's loading up on Orlando, but then all the Milwaukee guys were really, really low owned against a bad Orlando team where people are basically saying, okay, I need these Orlando players to do well. If they do well, the game's probably going to be somewhat competitive, and we're still not going to roster the team that they're playing against. So I do think that this is sort of a situation that, you know, it doesn't come up that often in basketball, but you're going to get a lot of ownership going to one side of this game and virtually none going to the other side. If the popular pieces on Orlando do what you're hoping they're going to do, there's a very good chance that you're getting the full 34, 35 minutes from Zach LaVine at 8,700 in a great spot, or DeRozan at 9K or whatever he is in a great spot. So I do think that it just makes it, you know, regardless of the ownership on the Orlando side, this would still be a spot where LaVine and DeRozan and these guys look good in tournaments, but they look even better to me just knowing that it's kind of like the equivalent of like an NFL when there's a popular tight end and a popular receiver from the same team, but the quarterback doesn't get any ownership. It's like, oh, okay, well, I can just like positively correlate with what the field's doing, but be contrarian while doing it. Like, that's always a thing that I like to do.
I'm with you on that. It does make Chicago a little bit more appealing. I think they do look, just generally look a little bit better on FanDuel as well. What's your expectation on minutes for Vooch? It's not going to matter at all for 8,800 on DraftKings, or at least it probably doesn't matter all that much, just given the way center is made up. But he's 7,600 on FanDuel. Revenge narrative is in play in this one as well. I gave him 30 minutes. I think he looks okay. No reason to think that he couldn't play 32 to 34, but I like that price tag on FanDuel.
Yeah, I think 30 is really reasonable to me. I mean, he played 26 last game. Obviously, I can't see Popcorn Machine to have a really good feel of how that rotation went. I do know that he was limited coming into the game, but I still would like to see the rotations just because, like, you know.
Yeah, Add More Funds has it. That's where I ultimately.
Oh, I forgot they even had.
Yeah, yeah. So I wish I would have said that to you before we started this up. But yeah, so they actually have that rotation if you want to check it out.
Okay, cool. Matt's probably watching this just like cussing at me under his breath.
Yeah. Basically, they went Vooch. Derek Jones was the backup for most of it. And then Tony Bradley got 2 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Okay. So kind of what I was trying to get to here, and I don't know what the score is. So the game ended up being close enough. Those last like 2 minutes for Vooch, I was like if that had been like a blowout situation or a foul situation, it would make me like him even more. I don't think that it was, but either way, I think 30 is a very reasonable projection for Vooch. You certainly could see a couple more minutes here. And oh no, he did foul out. So he was basically on pace to play 28 minutes in that game on his minutes limit. So seems likely he plays, you know, 30 plus here.
Yep. I'm with you. All righty. Let's do it now. Orlando Magic. Wendell Carter Jr., probably the guy we need to start with. He is projected for 43% ownership on FanDuel, 28 on DraftKings. He's 5,500 and 5,600 across both sites. He just looks good. Franz Wagner continues to be a value play across both, particularly on DraftKings at 4,300. Jalen Suggs and Mo Bamba are both in the teens in ownership. I think both of those things make a lot of sense. You can very easily talk me into shares of RJ Hampton or Gary Harris, particularly if Terrence Ross ends up out. But Wendell Carter Jr. is pretty clearly the best option here from Orlando.
Yeah, I agree. I really have no idea what's happening with his pricing. Like, he would be a obvious value if Cole Anthony were in. If Cole Anthony's out, there's, you know, more opportunities kind of to do everything anyway. But the salary here just makes no sense. He's averaging about 25 to 26 minutes per game for the season. But that includes, I think, an injury at one point. Definitely a bunch of foul trouble, a bunch of blowouts. You know, even if you were to give him 26 minutes, he's going to look good. Realistically, he's pretty likely to play 28 plus and just look great. He's at 1.06 DraftKings points per minute for the season. He's tied with Bamba for the team lead in total rebounding percentage. He's got a double-digit assist percentage. There's no reason not to like Carter here. The only, like, argument against him would be ownership, obviously. At this price tag, there are plenty of alternatives that give you, you know, the same range of outcomes, or at least a similar one. But with it being such a large slate, 28% ownership is a lot, but it's not like you're running the other direction. There's going to be plenty of low-owned guys that look good that you can get to balance out that ownership.
What else do we do with Orlando? Is it just Wagner, Suggs, Bamba as like the key pieces? You don't, there's no other like legitimate priorities here?
Yeah, I think so. Keep an eye on Terrence Ross. He was a late scratch last game. He's very inexpensive. So if he were to play, I think that's a spot you could go to as well.
All righty. Anything else here for Orlando?
No. I guess I will just kind of quickly add on Bamba. His rebounding numbers have gotten better. I don't know if that's in part because of games where like Carter was not on the floor, but Bamba now has an identical rebounding percentage to, never mind, this is from last season. Take it back. I was going to say he must have been rebounding at a really good level. Yeah, so Bamba's still second to Carter at 15.8%, but he is averaging 3.3 blocks per 100 possessions, 1.5 steals per 100 possessions. He looks good. I was going to say his rebounding numbers have been insane lately, I guess, but I was looking at it since the start of last season.
There you go. Toronto Raptors, 4-point dogs in Indiana, 211 total. Gary Trent, the only guy in double digits in ownership for the Raptors. That's 12% on FanDuel. I actually like him there at 5,800 guard forward eligibility. I will continue to go to a little bit of Fred VanVleet if he's 2% owned on FanDuel, 5% on DraftKings. I think you can make a case for a little bit of Pascal Siakam. I think you can make a case for a little bit of Scotty Barnes. We definitely want to talk at least a little bit about Toronto's status here, where we have a Q tag on OG Anunoby, and Kem Birch is out. I think Precious Achiuwa at 4,100 on DraftKings, that 3% ownership is sort of going underrepresented. I'm not entirely sure why it's only 3% ownership. We're talking about an Achiuwa that has played 25, 26, and 27.5 minutes in his last three. I think he's going to look a little bit better than that for 4,100. Just center eligibility is sort of the problem here. What stands out to you for Toronto and any expectations on OG?
Yeah, I was going to say, especially on DraftKings, where you can roster two centers, 4,100 looks good for Achiuwa. He's been a 0.94 DraftKings point per minute guy this year. Like you said, he's playing mid to upper 20s. So I do think he looks like a good value. I don't have a real read on Anunoby. If he's in, I think it's a knock on Scotty Barnes in particular. Gary Trent loses a little bit as well. I think Siakam and VanVleet look reasonable one way or the other. They don't stand out at their salaries. They don't look bad. I don't think Anunoby has too much of an impact on them.
All right.
Yeah, it like is.
Go ahead.
I think Anunoby went to Indiana, if you want to play that narrative.
He did go to Indiana. So that narrative, I guess, does exist. We'll see if he rushes himself back here to make sure that he gets into Indiana. Anything else for Toronto?
Nope.
All righty. On the Pacers side, I believe everybody is in, but let me just click back over here because I lost my page. Yeah, so still just TJ Warren as the guy that is out. The big piece we have here, Malcolm Brogdon, 7,200 on FanDuel, 7,500 on DraftKings. We saw him play 46 and a half minutes in the overtime affair two nights ago against the Lakers. He's 26% owned on FanDuel, 18 on DraftKings. We're seeing Miles Turner get into double digits on DK. Obviously, Sabonis and LeVert are both viable. It's those four guys and nobody else for me, but Brogdon pretty clearly the best option.
Yeah, Indiana maybe just never going to have another normal rotation again at this point. But yep. I think the big takeaway from last game was that, as we expected, there was no reason to be concerned about what the playing time was going to look like for the starters in a normal game. You know, we had seen their playing time down three straight games prior to last game because of the game where they were all benched and then two massive blowouts. Brogdon played about 41 minutes in regulation. I don't expect that to be the norm, but there's no reason not to think he's going to play, you know, 34 to 36 minutes at least in competitive games. Same goes for Sabonis, who's, you know, likely to play 34 to 35 minutes. He dealt with some first half foul trouble last game that kept his playing time down. But it's pretty much status quo with this team. I don't think that, you know, like in competitive games, you're going to get 30 to 31 minutes or 32 minutes from Turner, probably 30-ish from LeVert, give or take. And then you're going to get a lot from Brogdon and Sabonis. So with the decreasing salaries, Brogdon looks great. Turner looks good. Sabonis looks good. But Brogdon's one that really stands out.
All righty. All good on this one?
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out what happened with LeVert.
Yeah, he is a problem for me. I got him in for 28 minutes. I mean, if this dude keeps having like a 29.5% usage rate, I'm going to keep playing a ton of him. I just need him to do something when he does it.
Yeah, I mean, like you expect him to play fewer minutes than the other guys. He did deal with some foul trouble last game. I still think at his salary, he has a ceiling. The usage obviously comes down in the games that he's played with Sabonis, or with Brogdon, rather.
Yeah.
He's at 25.2% in those eight games, but it's still, you know, a $5,600 price tag where potentially you're getting 28 to 30 minutes of a guy that's not afraid to shoot the ball.
Absolutely. All right. Atlanta, coin flip game here against Memphis, 226 total. That is at least was the biggest mark on the slate. For Atlanta, we know what's going on here other than a Q tag on Bogdanović, who's sort of just had one for a while now. Everybody else that's out has been out. On the Memphis side, we've got the Q tag on D'Anthony Melton. Everybody else is essentially available. So we'll talk about Atlanta, where the only person in double digits in ownership is Trae Young, 8,700 on FanDuel, 9,300 on DraftKings. I'll happily have Trae Young in a spot like this. I think it looks good. The lack of ownership, though, coming into the rest of these guys is really interesting to me. I will have, like, I want to play a $7,800 John Collins power forward center eligible on FanDuel where he's 1% owned. We have Bogdanović 1% owned. That's interesting to me if he plays, but I can understand why that is relatively low. But John Collins here, I think, is getting underrepresented. What do you see for Atlanta?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Like, I agree with that. 7,300 for Collins, he certainly gives you a high ceiling. Clint Capella, you can make the same case at 7,500. He's, you know, seen more playing time in general recently. Both of these guys are players I like getting to. They're not at price points that really drive up their ownership because they are more or less correctly priced, but it's kind of like erring towards the floor more so than the ceiling. So it's like slightly underpriced, but not drastically enough to really drive up ownership. I really like getting guys like that. Bogdanović, Herter, either of those guys are fine. Trae Young, always fine to get to, but the front court's where I think I'll probably land the most.
You and me both. You and me both. On the Memphis side, we've got 17% owned on FanDuel. Ja Morant, he's in double digits on DraftKings as well. We see Jaren Jackson get to about 12%. We see Brandon Clark at 16%, power forward center eligible, 3,500. I'd like to get your thoughts there. How do you feel about Memphis, assuming we're getting like a relatively normal Dylan Brooks rotation? And I'm going to assume, at least for right now, that D'Anthony Melton is back, and that just sort of removes John Conchar.
I mean, I was assuming that Melton was out because they had said he was going to miss a few games, but he is listed as questionable, so maybe he's back. I think basically, you know, we've talked before about Brooks coming back. It doesn't make the ceiling of someone like Morant lower. It just makes his chances of hitting it a little bit lower because the usage goes down. Desmond Bane becomes really difficult to play because he loses several points to Dylan Brooks. But I think that Brooks himself at 5,900 is kind of interesting in tournaments. Don't know how many minutes he's going to play. He played 25 to 26 last game. If you were to see him get, you know, 30 plus minutes here, he certainly has a ceiling. But I think it's pretty much Ja Morant and Jackson that look the best. Neither one is someone that I think is like a must play or anything. There were guys that I really like at high ownership. So if they're going to be about 12% owned on DraftKings, I think that's reasonable, but it's not a spot that I'm like actively looking to get to. Brandon Clark as a value option, I think, is fine. We've seen him, you know, obviously make his way into the rotation. He played 26 minutes last game. I don't know if Melton returning potentially has a negative impact on him, but I would assume that Melton's taking minutes from Conchar and potentially Zaire Williams before he's cutting the Brandon Clark. It seems like Brandon Clark is more so just taking the minutes from Xavier Tillman, and then he's also taking some minutes from Steven Adams.
Yeah, luckily Clark is 4,800 on FanDuel, so you don't have to worry about it really at all on a day like today. Alrighty.
Yeah, I just lean towards someone like Clark hanging around in the rotation now that he's clearly out of the doghouse, because he's someone they should want to get more minutes. Like, he was good when he got opportunities, you know, his rookie year. He's still young. He potentially is a, you know, future good NBA player. There's no real reason for them to just like kick him back to the bench.
I don't think he's as young as you think he is, but he is young. He's 25.
He's in like his third year.
Yeah, but he was old coming out.
Yeah. But I meant like he's a potential like still good rotation piece that has many years left.
You would just, and I don't mean you on this one, but like you just naturally assume that he's 22 and not 25.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. I think I knew he was older when he came out because that was kind of like the knock on him.
Yep. But yeah, I think, you know, I think he looks solid. I think we're going to have enough value on this slate that a 16% owned Brandon Clark here isn't really going to be much of a necessity, but we'll see where we end up by the time we get to the end of it all. Anything else here from Memphis?
No, that's it.
All righty. Well, let's talk a little bit about the presenting sponsor of this show. That would be Prize Picks. They offer daily prop-based contests. And this is the easiest part. You should use the promo code AWESOMO when you sign up. You can get a $100 first match deposit bonus. You don't want to leave this kind of money on the table. So if you've got $100, you want to make that deposit into Prize Picks. If you use that promo code, you'll get another $100 from them. You don't have to worry about sharks or optimizers or mass entries. You can make a 5-player lineup that can net you up to 10x your entry fee. That sounds pretty good. You can download the app in the App Store or on Google Play, or just go to prizepicks.com. We have player prop tools on our website that can help you make all of these plays. It's not even going to cost you anything to use them. So you really can't beat that deal either. I'm going to pull up a couple fantasy score player props here for Adam. We're going to go with a couple of them from this last game that we talked about, Memphis and Atlanta. How do you feel about 44.5 fantasy points to Ja Morant?
Over.
Yeah, I got him at 45.5. That seems to be okay. Like, probably not one that I want to go out of my way to select, but I think that it looks pretty good. What about 30.5 on Jaren Jackson?
Push.
Oh, really?
I guess okay. I would lean over.
I got him quite a bit ahead of that, so I guess I'm team Jaren Jackson for today.
Well, I mean, my issue with Jackson is always the frequency with which he gets in foul trouble and plays 24 minutes.
That's a good point. I'm going to pull...
Like, I haven't projected over, too, but I just kind of always, on like a question like that with Jackson, I'm like, all right, well, if he plays his normal minutes, it's an easy over, but he's going to play like 3/4 of his normal minutes, like 50% of the time, so...
Yeah, and that's... It's very different. You don't need a ceiling game in this scenario when you're playing on Prize Picks. That doesn't matter. If you beat it by 20, that doesn't really help you at all. So you do want to have a slightly different lens for this sort of stuff. I'm going to hit you with a couple of my overall favorites that exist. I just pulled all of the props that are out there, ignoring the 330 game. There are 60 different fantasy point projection props posted to Prize Picks right now. One of which, Bojan Bogdanović, I basically have spot on. But my favorite right now, and I'm curious where you land, over under 32 fantasy points for Brandon Ingram.
I had to think about who Brandon Ingram plays for. You said 32?
Yeah.
This is kind of like the Jaren Jackson one. If he plays his normal minutes, it's an over. But if Utah does what they should do, he's going to play like 26 minutes.
Brandon Ingram is at the top because obviously I have Brandon Ingram in for like what I expect his close game run to be. He becomes the guy.
So this it goes back to what, most. Sorry, it goes back to what you were saying, like just viewing it differently. Yeah. In DFS, when we talk about this game, we're going to say like, you know, I'm not going to project Utah to blow out New Orleans, you know, whatever Ingram has a ceiling, blah, blah, blah. When you're just trying to get that, like, literally be over on his medium projection, I'm a little bit more willing to say, like, okay, like, this game is going to blow out a lot.
Yeah. I've got a couple others. Like, Franz Wagner is 20. I have the over there. Mo Bamba is at 30. I have the over there. Anthony Edwards is at 35. That's one that I'd feel a little bit more comfortable just immediately locking in. That's my fourth best option. There are a couple others that stand out at the top, but that's where I'm at right now for prize
picks.
I like
all of those more than Ingram.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, Ingram is more of a GPP play.
Sure.
We're on the same page there. All righty. That is prize picks. Don't forget, use that promo code Osmo when you sign up and get a little bit of extra cash on that first deposit. We go to your Washington Wizards taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder. We saw Davis Bertans make his illustrious return to Washington for today. It's still no Rui, still no Thomas Bryant for Oklahoma City, still no Shea. I don't see anything that is really all that interesting today from the Wizards, which is kind of a shame when you face Oklahoma City, but do you want to get to any of your boys here?
It's just tournament pieces. I mean, it is obviously a good matchup against OKC. Beal's price tag is slowly dropping down, but it just still doesn't stand out. You know, he's scoring dependent. He's on a team where, you know, they're just better than they were in the past. He doesn't have to do everything on this team. So there's still a ceiling there, but there's still going to be plenty of options in this price range that probably look a little bit better. You know, the center spot is where I think I probably take the most shots in tournaments. Daniel Gafford, 4,400, certainly has a ceiling. Trez at 6,300, absolutely has a ceiling. I think those guys, they should be low owned because there's enough games where they're going to just split the minutes. And they're priced pretty close to correctly, but there is a lot of volatility in their games, which is appealing.
I thought that somebody was just going to pop really well here, just up against Oklahoma City, and that is just not the case. Everybody just looks so neutral to not interesting. Ugh. And now we got to talk about the Oklahoma City side of this game. Again, no Shea, so things end up getting pretty weird, and there's a lot of ownership coming in here. Lu Dort, coming off of multiple games with big time minutes, is projected for 20% ownership across both sites. Shooting guard, small forward eligible across both. In particular, that is very important on DraftKings. We've got Josh Giddey at 6,200 on FanDuel, projected for 36% ownership. He is 6,500 on DraftKings. He is also around 25. We got Darius Bazley in the 15 to 20% range across both sites. Aaron Wiggins is getting a little bit of love at the flat minimum on DK. Not so sure that's super necessary, but he did get 26 minutes their last time out. Even Jeremiah Robinson Earl, 4,300 on DK, getting probably less love than I think he should at just 6.5% ownership, considering you can get him in there at power forward. How do we manage this Oklahoma City team, man?
Yeah, so I mean, part of it is going to depend on what the starting lineup looks like. If they go back to the Robinson Earl and Favors front court and kick Aaron Wiggins to the bench, he's obviously not going to look as good. If he starts again, though, like you said, 26 minutes, still not great. He had a 5% usage rate last game. Not really what you're looking for, but you know, minutes at 3K, like you were saying, though, probably not totally necessary on this slate. Where I am most interested is I think the guys that already have established roles, Giddey, Dort, to some extent, Bazley. Dort has played 114 minutes without Gilgeous Alexander on the floor this year. He has a 25.6% usage rate. He's still only averaged 0.81 DraftKings points per minute because he has a 46.8% true shooting percentage. That's kind of the issue that you run into with Dort is, you know, is he going to be able to make his shots? But the opportunities are certainly there for him, and he's reasonably priced, likely to play more minutes. Certainly guys for him to defend on this Washington team as well. So I do like Dort at 5,200. Giddey already leads this team in assists, even when Gilgeous Alexander is in. Without Gilgeous Alexander, he has a 38.6% assist percentage. Rebounding percentage is at 14.6%. Usage rate's up to 22.4% in 179 minutes without him. 1.13 DraftKings points per minute. And you do just sort of get a little bit more predictable Oklahoma City rotation where you can count on Giddey to play those 32 or 33 minutes as opposed to getting those games mixed in where he plays 27, 28. So I think he would look really good. Robinson Earl's fine. But to me, I think Dort and Giddey are the two that really stand out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think Robinson Earl for 4,300 is pretty interesting. Like, I don't know why he's only 6.5% owned. We're talking, he's been playing legitimate minutes. 28, yeah, 27, 32, 28 over the past four. Like, if he's in for 28 minutes here, yep, there are value plays DraftKings getting more ownership than that, that I don't think are as good.
0.83 points per minute for the year is fine as well.
Yeah.
Going, so I just wanted a bigger sample on Lu Dort. Since the start of last season, he's played 778 minutes without Gilgeous Alexander. Still a 25.8% usage rate, 0.92 DraftKings points per minute. So it is nice to see that usage rate, you know, hold over a much larger sample.
Yeah, he's been a problem for me in situations like this where when I put those rates in, it's like, oh boy, but 5,400 and 5,200, his price is actually a little bit higher than it used to be. And that is making him still look good, but not, I have to have Lu Dort in all of my lineups and this isn't going to be a fun ride.
Imagine looking at Kawhi Leonard at 5,200 and thinking you don't want him.
Outstanding. Anything else here for Oklahoma City?
Just in general, keep an eye on the starting lineup because this is a team with nothing to play for and a bunch of random dudes that they can mix and match.
Speaking of random dudes, I guess Teo Maledon's back. Played 13 minutes their last time out.
Good to know.
Yeah, like it's not really changing anything, but I know he was with the G League affiliate for a while. Apparently he's up, or at least he was up on the 24th.
Yeah, be ready for Aaron Wiggins to randomly become Teo Maledon.
Yep. All righty. The Boston Celtics at the San Antonio Spurs. Celtics are 3.5-point favorites in San Antonio. 214.5 total for Boston. We've got a Q tag on Jaylen Brown. Robert Williams is already out, and Jay Rich is doubtful. On the San Antonio side, we once again have a Q tag on Doug McDermott. We also have one on Devin Vassell. So for Boston, if Jaylen Brown happens to be out, that's going to change some things. I've got him in for right now playing 28 minutes. He'll be fully useless at 9,200 on DraftKings. The only ownership that's coming in this game is Al Horford on FanDuel at 7,400, where he's 18% owned. To me, that's too high. Marcus Smart is 14% owned on FanDuel. That's fine-ish. No ownership really coming into Jason Tatum. Marcus Smart at 9.5 is the highest on DraftKings. What do you see for Boston right now?
Nothing that really stands out, but I do still like some of this pricing in tournaments. Horford at 7,600 with power forward eligibility on DraftKings certainly gives you a high ceiling. He has the potential to play more minutes, only played about 24 last game, but has the potential to play more and produces at a little bit higher rate without Williams, as you would expect. Dennis Schroeder took a bunch of the minutes from Grant Williams last game. He's someone that I'm not super confident in him at 6,600, but if he does get another 35, 36 minutes, he certainly has a high ceiling. And then Marcus Smart is someone that I've actually liked quite a bit recently. He's only 5,400. He hasn't been a great fantasy producer this season. You know, he even complained about the fact that he just stands in the corner. But you're still talking about someone that's likely to play 35 or 36 minutes. He's averaged 0.81 DraftKings points per minute this year with only a 15% usage rate. There's a good chance that comes up a few points between now and the end of the season, just, you know, because that's typically where Marcus Smart ends up. So, you know, 0.81 DraftKings points per minute, if you're getting 36 minutes at 5,400 is fine anyway. And then, you know, knowing that there's always a ceiling with him because you could get a game where the usage goes up. You can get a game where he gets a bunch of steals. He's averaging 3.2 steals per 100 possessions this year. So there's just, I think, some volatility there at a pretty cheap price tag.
That works for me. Yeah. He's already up to the 14% ownership on FanDuel, which mutes him a little bit. 9.5 on DraftKings, not too bad either. But I do see him as the best option from Boston, so we're in agreement there. If Jaylen Brown happens to be out, does Tatum become significantly more interesting? Does anybody become significantly more interesting? Like, are we looking at Grant Williams differently than at 3,900, or is it like a Romeo Langford day?
I think Schroeder's the biggest change for me. Okay. If Brown is out, Smart would look a little bit better too, but I already like him. Schroeder, though, has averaged 35.5 minutes per game in 9 games without Brown. He has a 28.5% usage rate. 0.97 DraftKings points per minute isn't great for his salary, but that usage rate just, you know, shows how high the ceiling is if his shot's falling, if he's playing well. We know San Antonio has been a fast-paced team this year also, so Schroeder would be the guy that I think goes from, you know, like Tatum looks a little bit better. Smart looks a little bit better, but I already kind of like him. Schroeder goes from like kind of difficult to get to at his price tag to someone that I would actively be.
Okay. On the San Antonio side, like I said, we have questionable tags on Doug McDermott and Devin Vassell. We've got 20% ownership going to Jakob Poeltl across FanDuel and DK. I know how you and I are about to talk about that. Keldon Johnson is 5,300 on FanDuel, 5,500 on DraftKings. He is 18% owned on FanDuel. I agree with that ownership. Derek White's getting a little bit of love. DeJounte Murray is getting a little bit of love on DraftKings. Let's start with the two guys that are, or the guy that's pulling the most ownership, Jakob Poeltl, 20% on FanDuel, 19% on DraftKings. And that looks good to me.
Yeah, I don't see any reason not to be there. I mean, you can always, it's the center position, so you can always elect to go with lower owned guys, and it's not difficult to find ceiling. But I think he's pretty obviously mispriced. 1.05 DraftKings points per minute this season. Played about 29 minutes last game, like 31 the game before that. Last game, he didn't get garbage time either. He lost the final like almost 5 minutes. You almost saw, like, if that game had been competitive, you would have seen like 33 minutes from Poeltl. So I have a really hard time not liking him a lot at the salary.
We are on the same page. What do we do with the rest of this team? How do you feel about Murray, Johnson, White? Does it open anything? Like, what changes for you? How interesting does Lonnie Walker become if Devin Vassell ends up being out? I think there are some trickle-down effects here.
Yeah, I agree. Murray is always interesting to me in tournaments. He's just really good. He's like 1.3 DraftKings points per minute this year, but he's priced like he isn't. I don't really know why it feels weird, but like 9,400 for Murray, I don't really know why he's that cheap relative to some other guys that are either way more expensive and produce at a similar rate, or like Bradley Beal, who doesn't even rival his production and is only $300 less expensive. So I don't love the matchup, but I still like the ceiling on Murray. Derek White's cheap. Keldon Johnson's pretty cheap. He played about 34 minutes last game, so that was good to see. If Vassell is out, I do think taking some shots on Lonnie Walker makes sense. Okay.
Anything else here for San Antonio?
If McDermott and Vassell were both out, I think that makes Walker look pretty safe.
Yeah. At 3,800 shooting guard, small forward, he's going to become pretty popular, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, my only concern is that he kind of, like, even with McDermott out, he hasn't taken on a bigger role. But I think if McDermott and Vassell were both out, you'd probably see more.
Okay. Time to talk about the two stud pay-up options for today. Milwaukee, 4.5-point favorites in Denver. Milwaukee, same sort of stuff that's been going on for the Bucks. We've got no Brook Lopez, but his return appears to be imminent. Dante DiVincenzo getting closer a little bit. Still no Semi Ojeleye. On the Denver side, down another guy. We've got no PJ Dozier for the rest of the year. Torn ACL. Still have the Q tag on Nikola Jokic. Bones Highland also doubtful. I have Bones Highland out. I've got Jokic in for this one. We'll start on the Milwaukee side, where no one's really getting any ownership except for $6,500 Bobby Portis on FanDuel, power forward center eligible, 18% ownership. What do you want to do with Milwaukee?
I think it's pretty difficult to get to them at their salaries. You know, Giannis, you're never wrong for playing him. He's always a good option in tournaments, but he's 12-2. I mean, you're paying full price for him. Portis, the 7,100, looks okay, but doesn't really stand out. Same goes for $6,800 Holiday. I think Portis and Holiday are probably the two I get to the first here, just because they are in that mid-range. They do produce at a high level. They're likely to play a lot of minutes here. But, basically a healthy team now going into Denver with prices about where they should be. Not a lot stands out.
All righty. I guess we could talk about this when we get to the Jokic side of it. So on the Denver side, because I don't really have anything else I could possibly add for Milwaukee. We've got Will Barton, 6K on FanDuel today, shooting guard, small forward eligible. He is projected for 32% ownership. We've got Aaron Gordon at 14% on FanDuel. We've got Monty Morris at 12% on FanDuel. Nikola Jokic is 11.3 on FanDuel, 11.5 on DraftKings, not pulling too much ownership. I would like to have just a lot of Nikola Jokic anytime he can actually step on the floor, and today is no different.
Yeah, completely agree. I think he's pretty much always the top play on the slate when he plays at this point. He's played 234 minutes without Porter Jr. on the floor, 1.95 DraftKings points per minute this year, 35% usage rate, just shy of a 40% assist percentage, 24.5% rebounding percentage, just doing everything out there. He's not that expensive. He's $700 less expensive than Giannis. He is a center, so the opportunity cost is higher than it is on Giannis. But Jokic looks great to me. And you know, when he plays, it does make the rest of the team look less appealing. Although, as you were saying, the FanDuel pricing is pretty favorable.
Yes, it is. Thoughts on 32% owned Will Barton on FanDuel today at 6K?
I think he's a good play. I think 32% is probably too high.
Yeah.
127 minutes this year with Jokic on and Porter off. 0.91 DraftKings points, 0.86 FanDuel points per minute. Only an 18.8% usage rate for Barton, 20% assist percentage. He's certainly capable of destroying that salary. I'm not saying he isn't, but I think it's just one of those situations where even though he's underpriced at 6K, one, there's a lot of underpriced guys on FanDuel in general today. And two, that's just a price range where even if he does project the best out of, you know, a group of guys, there's still a pretty large field of players that at lower ownership that give you a similar range of outcomes. And he's just not a huge favorite to beat that field of guys. So typically in that price range, I end up just going a little bit underweight on the popular guy and getting more of the lower owned guys.
So this was something I was thinking about during the process show today. I wanted to get your thoughts on it once I started seeing, because we're seeing guys like Jokic and Giannis, Curry's price on DraftKings is massive today too. We're seeing these really big price tags there. And then basically everybody that should be like 10K is 9K or 8,500. It might be more of a FanDuel question than a DraftKings question. It seems to me that when I run Fantasy Cruncher pretty much unencumbered, making a balanced build is very, very easy to get to. And you're building a lineup that you stands out. Are we getting to the point now where it makes more sense to zig when everybody is zagging and get to a more stars and scrubs build now that everyone is trying to go more balanced because of salary?
I mean, I don't think about it in those terms, but it naturally, I think, kind of shakes out that way for me, where for a lot of this season, when you had pretty weak value and people were just like jamming in Giannis, for example, I was going more balanced because that is just like basically those just happened to be the lineups that were showing up as like my best combination of projection and low owned lineups. Yeah. And then now I think you kind of get a similar thing where because of the pricing, people are going a little bit more balanced, which I think is fine. I'm not saying like they shouldn't be. I think that's probably, you know, ownership aside, that's the way you probably should go. But with Jokic in particular, that's the one that I always kind of find myself like just jamming in because I think he's so much better than everybody else. You know, even as good as Giannis is, I think that Jokic is just like on a completely different level. So that's where I've been finding myself going stars and scrubs is basically Jokic slates. Like every other slate, I'm still pretty much going balanced.
Okay. I was just looking at it. Like that seems to be the easiest way for me to have different lineup construction, like to have an actual different style build. If it's so easy to just jam in 8K guys, then maybe I just want a little bit more Giannis at 6% ownership on the days that he's going to go for 75, 80 and make it a thing that you have to have and look a little bit lower from a salary tier. And it's just becoming, at least from a FanDuel perspective, where it seems like every single team we mentioned has a guy that's $800 underpriced. I kind of want to just sort of look at the alternative style of build if that ownership's just not going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, when you have all these guys like drastically underpriced, like on FanDuel, if Giannis goes for 75 or 80, obviously that's very, very good. You still don't necessarily have to have him. Like, you still have to have your value pieces do really, really well because there's a very good chance that people are going to have these $7,500 guys that score 55, especially on a, sure, you know, a full slate. So it's still, you know, yeah, like I'm not saying, you know, Giannis isn't a good play if he scores 80 points. Obviously, he's great. But yeah. I just like, I still don't know that you have to have him in that case. Teams can still catch you without him. And yeah, then obviously the games where he goes for 50, you're just screwed.
Yes. It was just something that, like, when I started seeing everybody be so underpriced and then I got to this game and it's like, oh no, they don't have any problem making Giannis and Jokic still be incredibly expensive. And then when I got the Curry, it was just like, I wonder if we should start to think about zigging instead of zagging there.
It's kind of doing the same thing. To me, it's sort of just like, cause I used to really like building balanced lineups like back in the day before optimizers and, you know, have a lot of success when guys in the mid-range did well. And then I kind of, one of the reasons I struggled for a little bit in NBA DFS was I kept doing that even as pricing got more so like the you know, kind of squished to where the guys at the top were underpriced and the guys at the bottom were underpriced and the guys in the middle were correct. And so it was like, yeah, I was zigging when everyone was zagging, but I was also just actively making lineups that didn't have the same chances of success. That's kind of how I feel about it here too. Like if they're going to give you correctly priced guys at the top and just a entire pool of underpriced guys in the middle, you're walking like a really, really thin line trying to go that route instead of just playing the ownership game with the guys in the middle and saying like, okay, I'll play the 2% owned Devin Booker if everybody's going to play the, you know, 30% owned whoever. Just, you know, make those plays in the middle, I think.
Gotcha. Final day for the stuffing promo. It expires today. If you want an NFL Express weekly pass, it's the best way that you can introduce yourself to NFL DFS. You can get it for $1 if you use the promo code stuffing. That will give you access to our player rankings, ownership rankings, literally everything we have to offer for NFL showdown and single game contests. You also get access to our premium tools and data for in-season fantasy football and tiers contests on DraftKings. Again, the promo code is stuffing. You can see it on the screen right now. Gives you access to our most expansive NFL Express pass ever for just $1. This offer ends today. Today is it. If you don't get it today, you don't get to use stuffing. Join Awesomeo Plus today. Three games to go, Adam. The New Orleans Pelicans, 11.5-point underdogs in Utah, 214 total. We've got JoVal, 7,200 on FanDuel, projected for 20% ownership. Yeah, that seems about right. 8,900 on DraftKings, where I don't even think he's like an awful play there, but going to be hard on an 11-game slate. Josh Hart getting 8% ownership on DraftKings. That's about it. We've got Brandon Ingram at 2% owned across both sites, 7,700 and 8K. He's probably like my favorite GPP play that's not getting any ownership here. At least if this game's going to be competitive, one, Brandon Ingram's going to play 36 minutes. Two, he's probably the reason that it's competitive, or at least one of the reasons. So I love Brandon Ingram as a GPP play today. And JoVal for 7,200 on FanDuel is comical.
Yeah, I'm with you on both of those guys. Josh Hart at 5,600, I think it makes sense that he's the highest owned guy here just because he's cheap. He fills a pretty weak position. He's playing a lot of minutes in competitive games. But from a ceiling standpoint, I'm with you. You know, 2% ownership going to Brandon Ingram, a guy with a 30% usage rate that is just capable of going off at any point, is really low. Even JoVal at 8,900, it's obviously a difficult matchup here, but he's not really the type of center that I'm overly concerned about Rudy Gobert. You know, he's not – he's not reliant on just, you know, getting putbacks and dunks. He actually has some off, like an offensive game. That's not, you know, pulling, if you can pull Gobert away from the basket, he's nowhere near the same threat to your fantasy production as if you're someone that is just reliant on having rebounds and scoring at the rim, which JoVal's not. So it's obviously difficult to get there, but 1% ownership on a guy that if this game is competitive is likely to give you 34 or 35 minutes, averages 1.25 fantasy points per minute in the games that Ingram has played this year, I think is a really, really interesting spot.
Speaking of interesting things, not that it probably matters here, but it appears we no longer have Jackson Hayes as a part of this rotation. It has been Willie Hernangómez for the past two games, played 22 minutes and 22 minutes. Now, I assume that JoVal is just playing 30-plus minutes every time that he possibly can, but we're getting close to a spot where I don't want to say it's like it's definitely not like Harold Gafford, but it is a sense where when Willie Hernangómez is going to get 20 plus minutes, he's the type of guy that can be a really nice value at 3,500. I don't think that he's all that viable on a slate of this size, but if we're going to get smaller slates with the Pelicans, Willie Hernangómez coming off the bench, if he's going to be able to get the backup run and JoVal sees any foul trouble, it's a nice backup center to get to.
Yeah, the huge thing that stands out to me here is his salary drop from 4,300 last slate to 3,500 today. We talk about backup centers a lot because typically they're very good per minute producers and you just need one guy ahead of them to get in foul trouble or for the game to blow out or whatever. Hernangómez certainly fits that. He's a good fantasy producer. I think it's important not to look at this as any sort of a timeshare or minute split. Valanciunas was in massive foul trouble two games ago. Last game was a huge blowout where Hernangómez got a bunch of second half run. So I don't think the correct like answer is to look and say, oh, Valanciunas is splitting time with Hernangómez now. I think that's wrong. But I do think that there's still a path to success for Hernangómez here because he's 3,500. On average, he's probably going to play like 16, 17 minutes and, you know, project for like six times his salary anyway. But any game where something goes wrong, either they get blown out or JoVal gets in foul trouble, Hernangómez can like real quick 8 to 10x. So yeah. I am interested in him, you know, obviously not in the same lineups as JoVal. So kind of two different things there. One, I don't view I don't really view Hernan Gomez as a negative for Jovell. I still think that in competitive games where he's not in foul trouble, Jovell's going to play big minutes. But I do think Hernan Gomez, especially at a mid-3K price tag, where you can roster two centers, is still viable in tournaments, although there's some chance he goes over Owen because of people watching game logs and thinking he is just like a 24-minute per game guy now.
Yeah, yeah. If you pop him in for 22 minutes right now and try to give that split, you're going to be getting a healthy amount of Willie Hernan Gomez, I promise.
Yeah, I kind of laughed last slate he was on because we talked about how he was in the rotation, but he played a bunch of minutes because of foul trouble. And then I don't know if the lineup ended up winning or not, but I know the lineup that was likely to win for a while had Hernan Gomez at like 1% owned. And I kind of laughed because I was like, I bet this person like played Hernan Gomez thinking he was some great play. Then was like, oh my God, how's he only 1% owned? And then had it confirmed because they lost by like 30 points and he played like the entire fourth. But yeah, so it's kind of twofold there. Don't get overly confident in Hernan Gomez or overly low on Valanciunas, but also Hernan Gomez certainly can succeed today.
Boom. Now, on the Utah side, this is another spot where you and I will say we both like Donovan Mitchell. He is 8,100 on FanDuel, 8,400 on DraftKings. I think Rudy Gobert looks pretty good for 8,200 on DK. He's 9K on FanDuel, and I think I've named 25 centers that are wildly underpriced, so I don't have as much interest in Rudy Gobert, and we know what we do with the rest of Utah. So Mitchell, some Gobert, nothing else of a priority.
Yeah, pretty much kind of the same as it always is. Gobert looks really good to me. Mitchell looks good. Rudy Gay is still playing 16 to 18 minutes. There's nothing that really stands out. Gobert and Mitchell are the top two. Obviously, you can get to some Conley, Bogdanovich, Clarkson. Those guys are all fine. But it's more so just like I'll have a Utah guy mixed into a decent amount of lineups, more so than like I expect one of these guys to be at the top of my exposure list.
All righty. Portland at Golden State. The Blazers are 7-point dogs, 225 total. Everything for Portland is just sort of normal here. We don't have anything really to worry about. It's just sort of the same guys that are always in that are in for today. We've got CJ McCollum pulling 12% ownership on FanDuel at 7,500. We've got Yusuf Nurkic pulling 13% ownership at 6,200. He played 32 minutes in their last game, which we've all been waiting for to happen. Just so happens that was one of those slates that I didn't play, but could have really used that the game before that when I actually had a ton of Yusuf Nurkic off of a late swap from Jokic. Super annoying. Good to see. Don't like seeing that the ownership is already there, though. How do we manage Portland?
Yeah, and it's also a scary spot because so the ownership is there. We're talking about literally one game where he's played real minutes. And then now you get Golden State where it makes all the sense in the world for him not to play real minutes. So I don't feel confident one way or the other. I'm certainly not going to feel good. Like, I'm not looking at this going like, oh, wow, 15% of the field's going to play Nurkic. That's great. You know, at 6,200, like, there's a good chance that just, like, ruins me if I'm not there. He's certainly capable of going nuts even in, like, 24 minutes. I don't feel confident that he's suddenly playing 32 minutes regularly, especially in this spot. So at 6,200, I assume I'll get the sum, but, probably not going crazy there. The rest of the team, I think, mostly correctly priced. 5,100 for Powell, I think, works as a pivot to like Josh Hart, but it's not like Hart was getting crazy amounts of ownership anyway. McCollum looks fine at 7,900. Difficult for me to get the Dame at 9,800, even though the ceiling's really high. I do still have interest in Larry Nance. He's 3,800. We had seen him typically playing a lot of minutes. Last game, he played 19 minutes. But, you know, if Nurkic doesn't close, there's a very good chance Nance is closing. So I think Nance, I think Little, assuming this game goes small, they work as sort of negative correlation plays with Nurkic.
Okay. Now we talk about Golden State. Steph Curry is 10,500 on FanDuel, pulling 9% ownership. He's 11,400 on DraftKings and pulling 6. Like, he is such a weird dude to look at in this sort of scenario with how underpriced so many guys are. They're just not doing that to Curry. But he's so, like, the ceiling's the same, but he's so not comparable to Nikola Jokic in this spot at a similar, in a similar situation. Same sort of story for Giannis, too. Like, it's just wild for Curry. I'm not going to love getting to him at all at 11-4 on DK. 10-5 seems a little bit more reasonable on FanDuel, but he's such a better play on DraftKings just from a scoring perspective. I think the best piece from Golden State, and really the only piece that is all that interesting, would be Draymond Green, 6,900 on FanDuel, 6,700 on DraftKings, power forward center eligibility.
Yeah, that's how I see it as well. I'm certainly not going to be upset about whatever amount of Steph I get to. But like you were saying, it's kind of just – Jokic just makes this tier so weird because on the one hand, getting – like you said, the ceiling is the same. You know, Curry can – he's already scored 86 points in a game this year, you know, 86 DraftKings points. So you can literally just look at his game logs and see what the ceiling looks like. But the problem is that Jokic gives you that same ceiling, but he also gives you a median outcome like 10 points higher. And so that's, you know, sort of the issue you run into there. Curry is going to look like a very good tournament option at low ownership whenever he's low owned, but it kind of just comes down to, you know, still the chances of success for Jokic versus Curry, I don't think are, you know, that close. So, yeah, not going to be upset about any amount of Curry, but also I think it'd be very difficult to get to. I'm with you on Draymond looking like the best non-Curry piece. 6,700, just a very reasonable price tag, likely to play 32, 33 minutes, decent spot for him. I don't feel strongly one way or the other, but assuming he's not going to pull much ownership, I don't mind getting there.
All righty. Yeah, I don't have much else to add here. Like Wiggins and Poole are all starting to be priced appropriately. And then after that, they're just going to play like nine more dudes.
Pretty much.
Closing it out.
If that matters for anybody.
Yeah. It shouldn't, but it kind of does, but like it doesn't. Somebody else, they'll just play some other random 14th guy on the bench for 9 minutes and we'll be good. Yep. Sacramento Kings, 7.5 point dogs against the Lakers, 222 total. We got a lot of ownership coming in here. More so on FanDuel than DraftKings, but flatter on DraftKings. So we've got Fox, Halliburton, and Hield, all 15 to 20% owned on FanDuel. We've got Barnes, Fox, Halliburton, Hield, and Davion Mitchell, all like 8% owned on the dot. We do need to talk a little bit about the health of Sacramento in that Harrison Barnes and Rashawn Holmes are both questionable for this one. They both left their last game early. I have them both in for right now. Holmes didn't play last game. I thought he had like a facial laceration in play. Oh, he didn't play. Okay. Got the facial laceration the game before that. Got it. Yeah. So Holmes did not play the last game. Appreciate you pointing that one out. I like Rashawn Holmes today at 6,700 or 6,200 on DraftKings if he's available. I like all of these guys for Sacramento that play Barnes, Fox, Halliburton, Hield. Like, I'm interested in most of these guys, some more than others, but I'm heavy on Sacramento because this is a massive pace up spot against a team that you would have assumed had a good defense, but does not.
Yeah, it's a good spot to get to. It's just reasonable pricing across the board. There's not one guy that stands out as like a glaring misprice, but it's sort of just the entire team is underpriced. And it really stands out on DraftKings where the pricing is sharper today than it is on FanDuel. 7,700 for Fox is fine. Barnes at 6,100 looks really good. I'm with you on Holmes at 6,200. If he plays, if he doesn't, and you're talking about a 3K Alex Len, sign me up for that. Halliburton, Heal, Mitchell, these guys all look like good options. And I like that they all are underpriced because it makes me not as concerned about trying to figure out, you know, if we don't have news, what the hell to do. Because, you know, if Barnes is out, obviously it's going to open up more minutes for potentially Mitchell, for Halliburton, maybe for Bagley, who knows. Terrence, you know, there's a lot of ways they could go here. But the same goes for Holmes. You know, if he's out, you certainly want to get the Len, but I just think that I'm going to end up with enough Sacramento mixed in the lineups that I'm going to have plenty of options to figure stuff out when we get that news.
Absolutely. You're just going to want multiple pieces of this game. And if you end up opening up enough salary, like there are worse things in the world than getting two pieces from the Los Angeles Lakers.
Right.
Which we are going to talk about right now. AD, 11K on FanDuel, 10.8 on DraftKings. Russ and LeBron are both under 10K on FanDuel. They are not quite in that price range on DraftKings. And then Talen Horton-Tucker is 5,100 and 5,200 across both sites, unowned. There's no ownership coming in to this team at all. I don't totally understand why that's the case. It makes me like Los Angeles today.
I don't really see much, assuming that LeBron plays. So Davis and Westbrook not on the injury report, LeBron questionable. Assuming he plays, I just don't really see anything here. I mean, on DraftKings, LeBron's the cheapest of the three at 10.5, Davis at 10.8, Westbrook at 11K. When all three of those guys are out there, they still have ceilings, but they just cannibalize each other so much. And on a slate like this, if I'm getting away from Jokic to get to a low-owned guy, I'd rather just be going to either Giannis or Steph because – they're so much better than the guys on the Lakers, I think, when they're all healthy. So that's kind of the issue for me. You know, 5,200 Horton Tucker could run into some stats, but same goes for Melo at 5,100, but I'm not going out of my way to get there. I don't really see much of anything if LeBron plays that I'm like super excited about getting to.
You and I talked about this from the difference between Steph on FanDuel and DraftKings.
Yeah.
We have Anthony Davis at 0.4% ownership on FanDuel. He's a 1.4 fantasy point per minute guy. If he is just fully unowned, I'm interested in him in GPPs. I just have to be. Like, do I want to get Jokic? Yeah. But Anthony Davis also still has power forward eligibility. Like, that's easy to get to for zero ownership whatsoever. That is appealing to me. I don't have all that much interest in Russ or LeBron. I think Talen Horton-Tucker for 5,100 would be my second favorite play. But I like Anthony Davis quite a bit on FanDuel if he is unowned for GPPs.
Yeah, I think that makes more sense. Because like you were saying, you know, Davis is a little bit more valuable probably on FanDuel. But also Curry is considerably less valuable.
Yeah, when I see that 0.4%, which, you know, I think it's going to be 3 or 4, I don't think that changes anything for me. I'd like to have like 15-ish percent Anthony Davis if he's 3% owned. He has a legitimate ceiling. He has the ability to, you know, put up like a pretty high-end double-double. And if the defensive stats come, which obviously they can, I wonder how much playing extended minutes at the four is affecting his like block and steal rates. I mean, yeah, obviously we can like look that stuff up, but you would think a bit. And playing DeAndre Jordan for 20 plus minutes is probably not helping matters much.
And so for what it's worth, Westbrook, James, and Davis have played 8 games together this year. Davis has been the one that you would want if you're going to one of them. 1.41 DraftKings points per minute for him, 1.16 for Westbrook, 1.25 for LeBron.
Yeah, like again, AD 0.3% owned on DraftKings at 10-8. I just think that looks good in tournaments.
What was your question? The blocks?
Yeah.
So 144 minutes with Jordan on this year, he's averaging 1.6 blocks per 100 possessions. Without Jordan or Howard, he has played 435 minutes. He's at 3.1 blocks per 100 possessions.
Okay, so massive. Probably. Yeah. Even if you want to like regress those a little bit, it's very clearly affecting his rates by having to play alongside of two shitty centers. So dumb, Lakers. So dumb. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I don't think that it's dumb at all in the regular season. I don't care at what they're doing from that perspective. The dumb part is having Russ. If AD wants to play half of his minutes or less at the four throughout the regular season until he's going to play 40 minutes at the five for the playoffs, by all means.
The biggest issue for me is like just get Horton Tucker to be like as good as you possibly can by the playoffs because you need him and not DeAndre Jordan.
Absolutely. Adam, anything else?
No, I think that's it. I'll have the deep dive coming out sometime after college football locks in an hour and then be back for the deeper dive tonight.
There we go, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy this slate. Enjoy all of the content that we have coming up the rest of the day. I think there's like 8 more live shows, so we're not going anywhere at awesomeo.com. Hit that like button on your way out the door if you haven't done it already. Win some money. Adam and I will be back again for the strategy show on Monday, so we'll see you then.